Welcome back to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. We're talking to Jonathan Emord about the state of healthcare in this country and about health freedom. You know, politics affects us in many ways, and in no small measure, our access to innovative physicians practicing integrative medicine, but also access to supplements that we choose to take. And there's a big push, and it's coming from sort of a cabal of legislative forces, the executive branch, agencies under control of the presidency, and in collusion, I think, with the media to a large extent, because we bore witness recently to a very scathing expose of the supplement industry on Frontline, on PBS. It wasn't pretty, because the thrust of their argument is that supplements aren't regulated. The public is at risk, and we need more laws, more regulations, and we need the FDA to be empowered to get in there and do something about it. So what's your take, Jonathan Emord?
Well, there is, one would hope that a person would be animated to jump up and down and scream that there ought to be regulation because the ground under their feet is shaking, or their house in which they live is on fire, or people are dying in the streets. But the fact of the matter is that dietary supplements in the United States are among the safest substances to ingest, even safer than common foods. Evidence over and over again, year after year, shows that more people die from eating common foods because of one reason or another, oftentimes salmonella or listeria, then die from dietary supplements. It's almost unheard of for someone to die from a dietary supplement, quite frequently, with some significant exceptions. Dietary supplements can be ingested in mass quantities and not result in death. There's vitamin D, certain vitamin A might be a difference, but it is not comparable to a synthetic substance that has known and significant side effects. You will never see a disclosure statement for a multivitamin that contains within it what you see for an advertisement for a statin drug, where the list of adverse complications
right.
are immense. And the reason for that is
right.
when you derive substances from foods, and you purify them, and you insert them into a dietary supplement, you are not increasing risk, you're decreasing risk. So, yes, there are bad actors in every area. There are bad actors who make food improperly and are rightly prosecuted for that. Bad actors in the dietary supplement field who spike supplements with drugs, or who sell impure substances and dangerous substances, and there are also those who do the same with drugs. The difference, though, is that drugs, by their very nature, are substances that are synthetic and that alter human chemistry in order to function. In the case of dietary supplements, by and large, almost without exception, these substances are ones that are known to the body in the sense that they are derived from foods that we have ingested. Now, there are some exceptions. But we don't see, bottom line, we don't see the instances of adverse events. Yet, the discussion has turned quite significantly in the direction of why ought we not regulate supplements as drugs. You might also ask, why ought we not regulate foods as drugs? And the reason for that is, the extent that you create barriers for consumers to gain access to common substances in the food supply, you elevate the price of those things to something comparable to drugs.
Hmm.
Would you like to buy an ear of corn for $75, or would you rather buy an ear of corn for 5 cents? I mean, would you rather buy vitamin C for $450 a bottle, or would you rather buy vitamin C for $15 a bottle? I mean, this is what we're talking about. We're not talking about any change in safety. The regulatory regime adopted by the government in this and most areas of regulation is one of prior restraint that applies regardless of the history of safety of a party. You must get pre-approval. The problem with that system is that it presumes everyone guilty in an environment where almost everyone is innocent.
Mm-hmm.
And it avoids the appropriate application of government power where you prosecute those who you have a reasonable suspicion are engaged in criminality. The laws are sufficient, in fact, they're voluminous, to prosecute parties for selling junk as a supplement. And there's no reason why the FDA, if it dedicated its resources to doing just that, could not assist and help the public health. Instead, it spends most of its money in the area of food safety on policing the drug companies' market against competition. So what do? They aren't looking. They aren't expending their resources in those limited instances where there is a direct instance of injury. With zeal, they're instead devoting the vast majority of their resources to policing what is said about supplements, where someone says vitamin C is an antioxidant, antioxidants may reduce your risk of some kinds of cancer. They may go after that person, even though that's undoubtedly true, because they prohibit absolutely any statement associating a nutrient or a dietary supplement with disease, even if it's true.
And that's right in your wheelhouse, because you are above and beyond everything, First Amendment attorney.
I've beaten the FDA over and over again. They still do the same thing.
Right.
They ignore the court's orders, and they put in place a regime that circumvents the very decisions that are supposed to have protected our liberties against government abuse, censorship of truthful information. But the problem is not that we need more regulation. The problem is that we need to reorient the nature of the law to what it was when people were presumed innocent and then prosecuted vigorously when found guilty. In both systems, the prior restraint system and the system of positive law, where you say, this is illegal, it's illegal for you to sell a product as a dietary supplement that causes an injury to people based on the ingredients that are in it under the conditions of use that you prescribe. So if you say, look, this product's not for people with fetal ketonuria, you say that, you've prevented yourself. But under the conditions of use, if you don't say that and your product would cause that injury, you should be liable for it. And there's civil liability, and there's also liability of the government under current law. But when you expand the regime to say no one may produce any dietary supplement without advanced government approval, the same system of corrupt government-controlled approval that exists now, wherein parties are denied the right to put into the market substances unless the government stamps it okay. Do you think that the corrupt regime at the FDA that now protects certain drug companies and gives them dominant market shares and polices their market would not exist for supplements? Would you rather have supplements that are very expensive and that are available only upon a physician's prescription? Or would you rather have the ability to help yourself at a reasonable price? That's really what we're talking about.
Well, the conspiracy theorists think that the FDA's initiatives and these legislative initiatives, which are supported largely by the media, I mean, you pick up the Times, you listen to PBS, that these initiatives basically are designed to hand the supplement industry in toto to the pharmaceutical companies who have the resources, they have the dollars, they have the attorneys, they have the schmoozers, many of them former FDA employees, revolving door style, who can get supplements approved much in the way that they now facilitate the approval of medications, and that will result in less creativity, fewer supplements on the market, but also skyrocketing costs for supplements because it's going to be pretty darn expensive to go through that bureaucratic meat grinder.
Well, just to give you an idea of the costs involved and the reason why that argument makes sense, we had an economist at Emory University, Dr. Shepard Bailey, perform a detailed assessment of what the cost of the good manufacturing practice guidelines would be on the entire supplement industry. In the course of doing that, she found that the largest supplement companies are but a fraction of the size of the typical drug company. So in other words, we're talking about a difference in wealth that is extraordinary. Now, the typical supplement company cannot spend tens of millions of dollars on clinical trials to prove safety of something for which people have, in the public at large have consumed for years without adverse effects. This is the problem in Europe, where the government is requiring this sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. It's already happening there.
What that means is that the only parties that would be able to satisfy a drug-type regime for supplements would necessarily have to have those resources and would necessarily have to, in order to recoup the investment, have a patented supplement, which means that you would have to rely on synthetic ingredients because natural ingredients are largely unpatentable. So you would end up with a emphasis on the creation of synthetic substances that are comparable to natural substances.
Designer molecules.
And getting, design molecules, and you'd have to get patents for them. And then there would be extensive clinical trials on safety and efficacy, and then you would get the supplement approved. But it would increasingly move us away from the natural paradigm that consumers want, and towards reliance on increasingly on synthetic compounds that mimic the effects of supplements in some degree, maybe not as good as a natural source or maybe substantially more potent than a natural source. But it's just it's determining who gets to play the game. It's limiting to a universe of very wealthy parties the ability to sell products that are largely safe by historical proof, and causing those who can acquire substances to be reduced by a substantial subset, because to get those substances you might need a physician's prescription, or you might have to gain access to them in a far limited market where your choices are constrained substantially from a universe of, say, a dozen or more options to one product or two products that have been government approved, with the costs of those being substantially higher than what they are today.
And it's already happening with certain products like fish oil, the pharmaceutical grade fish oil that's made by big pharma. May cost upwards of $400 to $500 per bottle, but the consumer sees it as a modest copay, and then insurance companies or Medicare pick up the tab. It's prescribed. The money goes to the pharmaceutical companies, and it's kind of like a magical transaction.
Right, and it's unfortunate when you eliminate people's choice on an assumption that at some dose level or in some circumstance injury may occur, which is true of anything that we use as consumers, you create a false paradigm that only in the end hurts the very people that you're saying you're helping. You're saying you're protecting consumers. Well, if you don't take into account economic injury, which is a palpable problem, people starve in the United States and around the world not because of the contamination of food per se, but because of the cost of food to them and the unavailability of it. Well, when you impose on a very wealthy society like the United States a false paradigm that forces people to expend a lot more money and give them fewer options, you're just hurting people. You're just, in the end, you're hurting people in ways that may be profound. The 110,000 people who may have experienced a reduction in the risk of a sudden death heart attack by consuming fish oil every day as a part of a dietary supplement may find it impossible to pay the $400 to do that on a daily basis for the pharmaceutical-grade product. And substantially fewer people will take fish oil, and so the numbers of people who could have been prevented will, you know, the actual number of people who would have experienced the prevention effect will go down, and far more people will die of sudden death heart attacks. There are these consequences. You make folic acid less available, more expensive. Women of childbearing age will increasingly have neural tube defect births because they're not consuming 400 to 800 micrograms of folic acid during their childbearing years before they become pregnant. We can go on and on. But the point is that freedom of choice and free markets lead to sound decisions. The government does have a role to play, but that's in going after those who have, for whom there are there's probable cause that they are committing a crime by denying people the truth in ways that cause them to suffer actual injuries, or by selling them something that it is not, or by selling them something that actually is contaminated. And there's a lot of work to be done there. It's a minority of the marketplace, but it's the source of the problem. Why not go after the source of the problem instead of making everybody walk around who's in this industry bearing a scarlet letter or stripes on their back as if they were felons? I mean, they're not the enemy. They're our friends. The enemy are those bad people who are actually hurting us. Go after them.
Absolutely.
Cheaper. It doesn't hurt every consumer in the country. It doesn't vilify and persecute every producer in the country. It goes after the source of the problem. Isn't that what law and order is all about? Isn't that what fairness is about, equity and justice? Instead, the government goes in the direction of prior restraints, which is, as I say, a way of categorizing an entire marketplace as guilty until proven innocent. Likewise, when they shift from the Paracelsian principle of toxicity to the assumption in Europe, which is the principle that everything is toxic until proven safe, or even in California. Essentially, everything is toxic until proven safe. Well, why should you have the demand for such extraordinary proof of safety in every circumstance, which in and of itself is extraordinarily expensive and beyond the actual ability of anyone to prove, when you have the epidemiological evidence that for 1,000 years people have consumed ginger without suffering liver failure? Yeah, you can consume ginger at such high dose levels it'll adversely affect your liver. The same is true with virtually any other substance. But as it goes, people have been having ginger in their food and without those experiences. Likewise with cinnamon. I mean, sure, you can have a cinnamon roll that could be inundated with such an enormous level of cinnamon that would start making you feel sick, and if you ate that 100 times over for the next 2 days, you might suffer a physiological problem. But we don't eat cinnamon like that. So what is our human experience? Our human experience is cinnamon safe. This is a regulator's dream.
Absolutely.
To make everyone subjected to control, mm-hmm. to divorce you of freedom and the right to choose, and to place those decisions in a highly paternalistic government that will dictate every aspect of your life. Do you want to live in a world like that? It's called totalitarianism. Do you want to have a society like that, or do you want to have a society like the Founding Fathers envisioned, where we're rugged individuals and we're free, where you might eat peanut butter and discover you have anaphylactic shock, but there would be no general prohibition against the availability of peanut butter except by prescription, because that denies you freedom.
Absolutely. But realistically, you know, you're in the belly of the beast. You're located in Washington. You have a lot of contacts with legislators, a lot of contacts in the supplement industry, and you kind of have your finger on the pulse. There is a big initiative within Congress to roll back on DSHEA, that's the current law regulating supplements, and to stiffen the regulatory environment. Do consumers have to fear that this is going to come to pass? Is this one of these Paul Revere moments where we have to say to arms, the regulators are coming?
Yes, and unfortunately, were it not for heroic individuals for the last 60 years, we would have had dietary supplements regulated as drugs. It's been tried again and again and again. The movement to do it is relentless. And the notion is that sooner or later, on the backs of a public health crisis, maybe it's Chipotle or maybe it's, you know, some other public health crisis, they are going to succeed in galvanizing enough public support to pass legislation of this sort where suddenly, you know, based on the a true sense of false cause, a true instance of false causality, they ban a substance. That's what happened with ephedra. Now, I won the case against FDA at the district court level where the judge rightly determined that FDA overreached its regulatory authority when it banned ephedra at every dose level. We
established it's a very, very useful herb. I used to use ephedra with great effectiveness as a natural antihistamine, as a treatment for asthma. When used properly and safely, it's a great herb. It's been used traditionally for millennia by Native Americans and you know people across the world, China.
Sure, and at dose levels under 20 milligrams of ephedra per daily dose, there's virtually no, if not no, evidence of any adverse effects whatsoever. And yet, even though the statute plainly requires the Paracelsian principle in the sense that the government would have to provide affirmative proof that something caused toxicity at the dose level prescribed, that is in accordance with its labeling directions, the court ultimately on appeal bent to political pressure from Congress, threats of renewed regulation, and the fear, I believe, the court felt that if they acted and it created such an enormous response, adverse public response, it would undermine the authority of the court or the image of the court. They just blithely overturned the district court's decision and upheld the agency on a broad notion of deference to administrative agency decision-making. And that's most unfortunate because what it did was strike from the market an entire product that was low dose levels undoubtedly safe. And so it also eliminated the Paracelsian principle from jurisprudence in that historically, prior to that point, dose determined toxicity, and that was the rule of thumb.
It was a bad precedent. It was a bad precedent because once, you know, first they came for ephedra and we said nothing, and then they came from, and you know how that expression goes, they can sort of knock things off relentlessly one by one until we're left with a really diminished materia medica for integrative medicine.
That's right, because what can be said of ephedra, if you don't have dose determining toxicity, everything at some dose level will cause injury. So if you can say that you can ban all ephedra on the basis that the FDA determined that at some elevated dose level it would cause injury, that principle enables you to ban every single substance, including even water. And then what it becomes is just the discretion of the bureaucrat. If the bureaucrat has bias or prejudice or economic self-interest in going after a particular substance in the marketplace that's a dietary supplement, they may do so solely at their whim by saying, at some dose level, this is going to cause injury. Here's the evidence. We therefore think it's a toxic substance. We're banning it.
So what's today's intelligent medicine call to action as we wrap up? What are some things that consumers can do to inform themselves about issues like this? And also, you've written several books which lay out some of these important principles. Tell us about those, please.
Well, I've written a number of books, but on the subjects that we're talking about today, Global Censorship of Health Information is one of my books, which goes into detail about those issues. And then The Rise of Tyranny, I talk about how basically the drug industry has gotten its way, even to the point of having unsafe substances approved again and again and again, and being left on the market. It's not just Vioxx that happened to. It's Avandia. It's a whole series of drugs that the medical reviewers at FDA even deemed to be too unsafe, and they were politically overruled by managers who are politicians in the agency that run it, and they bent to the will of the pharmaceutical industry and put them on the market, knowing, because their own medical reviewers had informed them, that these drugs were too unsafe to be in the market. But so those are the books. What is the call to action? Well, we really do have an epidemic of prior restraint in this country, and it's infecting all areas of law. We have a reduction in individual freedom and a reduction in freedom of choice, and that is because we are allowing people who would essentially be parents to the world to have their sway, and that means a regime of control that is so great that in the end they end up killing the very people they say they're helping.
Right.
Freedom ends up being a critical health benefit. If you are free to choose and are free to choose your doctor, free to choose what you eat, and free to choose what you ingest to support your health, you're vastly superior and more better off in your life and health than if you are forced to comply with the dictates of a person who doesn't even know who you are, but sets standards that are federal standards on what you may choose and how you may conduct your life to retain your health. In the end, there's no one who has a greater interest in your own health than you. On rare occasions, some people will throw caution to the wind and not care about their health. But for the overwhelming majority of people, they care most about their health, far more than an insurance clerk, far more than a bureaucrat at HHS. And if you can't do what is in your own best interest, cannot pursue the course you wish to take based on the information that is available, and are presumed ignorant, even though you're intelligent, you're living in a sad world. And it's a world that is common in totalitarian countries, but until the modern era has not been common in the United States.
Let's finally put in a plug for the Alliance for Natural Health. I know an organization that you're firmly allied with and that you've done some work with. The ANH, or the website is anh-usa.org, which is an organization that upholds health freedom initiatives across the board, whether it's statewide, whether it's national, Congress, and they get the word out on issues that are of importance whenever our health freedom is threatened.
Well, you're a part of ANH, and I'm an attorney for ANH, and I just think that the world of that organization, because it's exactly what we're talking about. It's an organization that is dedicated to fighting efforts undertaken by industry and by government to deprive people of freedom of informed choice and to deprive people of access to substances that are really have been shown historically to be indispensable to human health and to be a part and parcel of what we do as people to improve our condition. And when you have a government that so fundamentally affects your life that it determines what your fork hits on its on your plate, that's pretty bad. I mean, you can't really think of anything that is much worse than having total control over the food supply that goes into your body, and yet, you know, that's what we experience when a person is incarcerated. Their food is allocated to them by the government, but effectively, regulation can do the same thing. It can wipe out of the market choice and leave you with precious little options, precious few options over what you do, what you ingest, and how you protect your lives against disease.
Well, as usual, passionately and eloquently stated, we always enjoy visiting with you, and we continue to treasure you as a staunch ally in this fight as we try to uphold freedom of choice in health care, freedom of choice in access to supplements. I want to thank you very much, Jonathan Emord, for joining us. And the website you can get more information about Jonathan Emord is emord.com, E-M-O-R-D.com. And, you know, also you appear frequently in the media. You've been on TV with John Stossel recently. I think from time to time you appear on George Noory's Coast to Coast program. And you're getting the word out in a very important way. And there are not many like you, who are upholding our rights. So thanks so much for your work.
Well, thank you so much. Very much appreciate the opportunity.
My pleasure. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.